You're listening to the Hockey 411 podcast with your host, Brian Anderson. Hello and welcome to the Hockey 411 podcast presented by SeatGeek. Use the code THEHOCKEY411 to get $20 off your first purchase at SeatGeek.com. We're talking Florida Panthers this week. David DeWork from the Hockey News joins the pod. Dave, welcome back.
Brian, good to be back.
It's always a great time having you here on the show. I think this is episode 4 or 5 with you on. I don't know. I can't keep track anymore. We have a great time having you on, but let's talk about this Florida Panthers team. And I think the biggest word that came to mind when I was doing my research and I was watching games is streakiness. Like, they won a bunch of games, like 6 or 7 games in a row, then they lose 4 or 5 in a row, they win 2, lose 1. It's kind of been a little bit of a roller coaster year. We'll talk about the goaltending, we'll talk about the defense, but for the most part, when you sit and watch a game, it just kind of feels like they've picked up from where they're at. Like last night versus Minnesota, when we're talking about this, it felt like their forecheck, especially early in the game, setting a tone, was just relentless. It's your classic Maurice. We're just going to overwhelm you, and it's going to be wave after wave. But, you know, last year felt like there was a little bit more steadiness to it. At least in terms of right now, you kind of seen a little bit of an up and down here. But am I concerned about Florida? No. Are they going to make the playoffs? Yes. Are they going to probably make a deep run? Yes. Like, I'm not worried about this team. It's just the first word that popped into my mind was streakiness.
Yeah, they've done some ebbs and flows this year. And I mean, they had a run a few weeks ago where I think they, you know, to your point, they had won a bunch in a row. And then they followed that up by losing, whatever it was, like 3 or 4. And Paul Maurice said that there's just something missing from our identity. I need to identify something and we will get it fixed. And then sure enough, it was like a flip got switched. And all of a sudden they went on another streak. I think that was when they went on like their 7-game point streak. And then they go on the road and they get shut out twice in a row. First time they've been shut out in like a year. So go figure. And then they come back after the 2 shutouts and then they get a win in Edmonton in that crazy game. It was a 6-5. That was just a total wild insanity. Fun Stanley Cup rematch. And then the one you mentioned last night in Minnesota. The game in Edmonton, no Sasha Barkov. The game in Minnesota, no Sam Bennett. So Florida, when they're healthy, you know, they know what they're doing. Now they've been kind of managing these injuries a little bit. You know, Barkov is sick, Bennett is sick. So, you know, right now that fortunately nobody's hurt, but I think that kind of plays into it. But as you said, I'm not really that concerned big picture. They're going to be a playoff team. They have a great coaching staff that can get them dialed in, that they've proven that even when they fall off course, they can get them back on. So, you know, confidence is high with this team. As long as they stay healthy, you know, as you said, I wouldn't put another deep run past them.
No, I really wouldn't either. I think when you look at all 3 zones here, how they defend, how they regroup in the neutral zone, they're constantly effective forecheck. Paul Maurice has this team dialed in, especially on the X's and O's. It's one of the best coach teams in the league. It's just, you have these games where, you know, like you said, they get shut out in Western Canada and you have 6-5 game against Edmonton and then they look fantastic last night against Minnesota. There's this weird up and down with them right now, but we're still at Christmas here. I'm not overly concerned. Bill Zito's probably going to add at the deadline here and they're just going to kind of keep chug along. And then boom, when the playoffs come on, they're really going to turn it up and they're just going to keep going. But I do want to talk about an area that, at least early on in the year, has my eyebrows raised, and that's goaltending. And when you look at Sergei Bobrovsky's numbers, you know, a save percentage of an .892. Okay, it's a little below where he is. Nider coming back. Look, he's been through a lot. He's getting a bigger role here. .890 save percentage. Expected goal saved above average, both on the negative side. So what's really going on here? I know they lost some pieces on the blue line, Montour, Ekman Larson, but, you know, I wouldn't consider those guys elites in their own zone. You know, what's going on with this goaltending here? Look, I mean, Bob, there are certain nights where it's just like, I feels like he can't get a save. But like last night, I thought he looked sharp outside of, you know, maybe 1 or 2 saves where I thought his positioning really carried him here. But what's really going on here? Because like, as an example, like Stolarz is killing it in Toronto. And, you know, we're turning back to these guys here, and it's nothing against anybody right now. I'm just curious, you know, you're a goalie guy. As Paul Maurice said last night, you're part of the goalie union. So what is this dynamic going on here? Because if they do want to make a run, there needs to be a little bit of an uptick.
Yeah, it's certainly nothing that I'd be confident about the way the goaltending has been this season heading into the playoffs. Now, we've seen Sergei Bobrovsky, this is year six now of Sergei Bobrovsky in South Florida, and we've seen a lot of some regular seasons, for lack of a better term. And then he turns it on in the playoffs, and then he becomes this amazing, like, you know, three consecutive years in the postseason now, whether it was the President's Trophy or the run to the final against where they lost to Vegas, or last year going to the Cup. On the whole, you know, Bob was excellent. Now, were there a couple rough games, rough goals? Sure. You know, but the hope, and I guess what they're leaning on, is that Bob's going to be able to snap back into form. It has not, you know, you talk about the inconsistency is what I look at with the goaltending, just because you kind of alluded to it. One night you got Sergei Bobrovsky out there, you know, gives up one goal on 30 shots, looks spectacular. And then you got another night where he'll give up four on 19 shots, to, you know, torpedoes his stats, which has happened multiple times to him and to Nider. And the Panthers are a team that they're going to mask a lot of those issues because they can score a lot of goals. But yeah, it's, you know, when the playoffs get here, everything shrinks. The scores shrink, time and space. It gets a lot harder. You mentioned some of the stats. I went into the advanced goalie stats. I don't know if it was earlier this week or last week. I can't keep track anymore. But I put a little story together just because I kind of went down a similar rabbit hole to what you're talking about right now. And it just wasn't pretty. Between, you know, goals saved above expected, wins above replacement. It was just dire. And when you think about these two guys have almost 15 million in cap space tied up between them. Yeah, it has me at a loss. Like, I wonder what's going to happen in the future. Like, they're both off the books after next season. So there's going to be decisions to be made. Now, Knight's a restricted free agent. He's still very young. And that's, you know, you can't, I think he may still end up being everything that he's expected to be, but he's probably still a few years away from that. He's what, 22 right now? So I would, patience is, I think, which is fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that at all, except when you pay the guy $4.5 million a year and heap all these expectations on his shoulders. Now, suddenly he needs to be that guy as a 20, 21 year old kid. And he's just not there yet. You add to that, you know, the time he took away from the game last year to go into the program with the league and the Players Association Assistance Program. And it's just, I would just preach patience with Spencer Knight. I'm not ready to write him off at all by any stretch, but I don't think that he's there now, nor does he necessarily need to be there now. The contract makes things a little difficult. So, you know, that's something that I'm very curious to see how it plays out. But with Bobrovsky, I think right now the hope is just that he's going to snap back in as he has the last few years, because for better or worse, the Panthers are married to this goaltending tandem for the next 2 years, unless they want to do something and eat some salary somewhere. I can't see them doing that with Knight, just as I said, he's still so young. And there's nothing I've seen or heard from anybody around would lead me to think that they're not seeing him as part of the future. But with Bob, you know, maybe Zito has he's got some younger kid that he can bring in on the cheap. That's going to be, you know, like a Scott Wedgwood type out there, who's probably going to go and tear it up in Colorado. Wait, Wedgwood? I said Wedgwood, didn't I? I'm talking about Blackwood. I always confuse those two. I swear to God.
They did put out a post today saying it was the lumberyard because of all the wood that were laying in front of the net. So it's a genius marketing campaign.
And I'm high on Colorado right now, man. When I saw them make that move, I'm like, they finally have this is an under the radar goaltender, but he's good. And I can see Colorado. We're talking Panthers, but I'm just Panthers Avalanche final. You know, Bob stays hot. Let's see how that goes. But yeah, just to kind of put a bow on it, I'm with you. I have a lot more questions than answers regarding the goalie situation. I'm very curious to see how it all plays out. But yeah, it's probably gonna kind of bring a couple of gray hairs between Panther fans and maybe people in that front office if it continues to go down the path that it's been on the first, you know, 30 some odd games this year.
You mentioned more of the goalie data and diving into the analytics from it. His high danger save percentage, both of theirs, is kind of eye-popping. It's not really the best here right now. And you look at some of the outer slot shots and you're like, okay, like, I don't love that either. I mean, Pop's 36. Like, I fully expect this Panthers team, when his contract is done, to be like, look, man, we'll give you a 1 or 2 year deal on like a vet minimum, and you can come back and just, you know, kick it around. But, you know, 36 for a goaltender, you're getting up there. Those hips really, really start locking up and they really start hurting. I know it was a priority for the Panthers to get him rest when they could. And then with Nider, look, he was fine in the minors last year. In the AHL, he had a 905 save percentage through like 40-something games. Like, that's very respectable in the AHL. Like, AHL's good development hockey, and I want him to take the next step. He needs to be that guy, and I don't know if I've seen it. And like I said, it's, you know, you put a lot of eggs in the basket here with these two guys, and I know it's easy for me to look at it, but Stolarz, before they found the pebble in his knee, he's kind of killing it in Toronto. Him and Wohl were really looking sharp, so that's something I definitely think just kind of circle in the back of your head if you're a Panthers fan here. But look, your goaltending is only as good as your defense in front, and losing Montour and Ekman-Larsson in the offseason, there are times where it shows, because you're really relying on guys like a Nico Mikkola and a Dmitry Kulikov and Nate Schmidt, guys that I don't know if I'd give as bigger minutes on a different team. And I know Boqvist is hurt right now, and they signed him, and I really want him to take the next step. Look, you have Gustav Forsling here as your number one defenseman. He is probably the best well-rounded defenseman in the game. Like, his defensive zone work is incredible. The fact that he could, in the playoffs, shut down your best defenseman last year is fantastic. Ekblad, I really like too, as a 2-3. But the problem is with Ekblad, I don't know if he can stay healthy. I mean, how many times year after year he goes down with a lower body injury? And I love his game. I love the guy. It's just health is a massive question mark. And then you have the rest of the four at 4, 5, 6. And I don't know how much minutes I can get. Like, if you're on a really deep blue line, how many minutes are these guys getting? And it just feels like Zito might have to try and find something in the bargain bin. Or if you're going to go add at the deadline, it's on this blue line, because it's definitely not as deep as it was, say, last year.
Yeah, I agree that if they make a move, it would probably be on the back end. If there was a move to be made, they're very happy with the depth they have at forward this year. They actually think it's better than they had last year, just because it's a little bit more veteran savvy. But yeah, it's interesting to think about how they're going to play it out on defense, right? Because, you know, as you said, Forsling, elite, amazing. Ekblad is having a spectacular year. He actually kind of, we was talking after the game last night in Minnesota, and we're talking about his season to this point. He turned around and he knocked on the wood on the locker behind him as he said that he's, you know, his health is one of the things that's gone so well for him, because, you know, nobody knows better than he does. You know, he wants to be in there. He wants to play 82 games. He does not want to sit out, and he's had some injury issues during his career. So to see him playing at the level he's playing at, to get the offensive opportunities that he's getting right now, it's definitely a nice, I don't want to say a bounce back year for him, because he hasn't played poorly by any stretch the last few years. Just his offensive numbers have taken a dip because of the way that they've asked him to play and the responsibilities that they've given him. But now it's kind of all coming back around for him, and it's great to see. Good for him in a contract year. I don't know how good it would be for him and his desires to stay in South Florida. That'll be a fun thing for them to maneuver over the next several months. But I do really like Nico Mikkola. I think he's the guy that like nobody's ever heard of, but he's a very steady guy. Sprinkles in the offense. I think, what is he, scored in back-to-back games now, something like that. You know, good for him. Schmidt's been fine. Kulikov has been fine. Belinskis, I think he's a little ups and downs a little bit. Like, we've seen some really good from him. I mean, you know, it's a great dude. He gives everything he has, does whatever he's asked. I don't know if there's still an adjustment period, because he's been in North America for over a year now, so he should, you know, have a pretty good handle between his time with the Checkers last year and with the Panthers this year. But if there is an area, goaltending we just talked about, but I wouldn't be surprised, and there's been some chatter that they, you know, Zito might be looking for like a right-handed defenseman, but I feel like that's been every year for the last several. Panthers are always in the market for a right-handed defenseman. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. At the end of the day, they're pretty happy with the group that they have. You mentioned Boqvist, who hasn't played in a little while. He actually scored on the road trip before he came out of the lineup. They had him quarterbacking the power play at the beginning of the year. Didn't quite work out the way they wanted. Belinskis did it for a little while. Now they got Ekblad again, and I have a feeling that they're happy with the way it works. No reason they wouldn't stick with Ekblad. But they've got a lot of options, so, you know, we'll see how it plays out, right?
We'll definitely see how it plays out. It's just when you look at name value and you start looking at statistics, I don't like when you're looking in playoffs, I don't know how much I love. Like one of these guys goes down, like Mikula goes down, you know, Kulikov goes down. Can we really start pressing, you know, Nate Schmidt to play these bigger minutes? Look, I like Nate Schmidt. I think he's a good puck moving defenseman, strong skater. I don't know if he was that guy like I saw in Vegas or Winnipeg all those years ago. Like it just something doesn't jive here. It just feels like, at least from an outsider's point of view, that there's going to be a name added. Like this is the area because you can't add a goaltending because of the cap space there. We like their forward core and we're going to get into it. As we said, if there's one area that you can go get another defense, really start to beef up that blue line. And, you know, let's talk about this forward core here. And we mentioned the depth and I definitely want to talk about the bottom six because the bottom six was really, really impressive over the last couple of games that I've been able to watch. And, you know, Boquist is really doing well. He's stepping up into the role that, you know, Sam Bennett's at the two. Lundell's kind of filling in there. Like, he's been a nice middle six add. E-Rod, Evan Rodriguez, if you don't know him. One of the best signings that Bill Zito has ever done here in Florida, if you ask me. I mean, a guy who plays a 200-foot game. He's got a little bit of a touch to him. It's just been really, really fantastic. I do want to talk about Mackey, but I'm going to kind of slide that to the side. Greer's been fine. Nosek is a true veteran. Gagovic, solid. Like, I liked him last year as well. Like, good bruiser there. Like, this bottom six here, it's a good mix of, like, good skating, puck moving, got a little bit of finish, good defense. Like, it's something that when you stack it up and we talk about playoff hockey, yeah, this is a nice little, like, we'll come at you. I'll send my third line at you, kind of stuff my team on the forecheck here in the own zone, or I have to go bail someone out. I'm going to send my third line because I feel confident in it.
Well, that's kind of the luxury that they've had in the playoffs the last couple of years, whether they were on the road or whether at home. And one of the reasons they've been such a good road team is you can't really play the matchup game too well against Florida because they've got so many good so many good centers that they're so deep down the middle that you can't, whether it's the Barkov line, whether it's the Bennett line, whether it's the Lundell line, and even the Thomas Nosek line, you're going to be defended hard. Anton Lundell is not a third line center in the NHL. He's not a third line center. He is in the Panthers because they've got Sasha Barkov and Sam Bennett ahead of him. But he's grown into a very, very good two-way center. And they not so much anymore because it got old, but they called him Baby Barkov down here for a while. And now it's just like part of the norm, what you expect from him. Like that line with him and Lundell, or with him and Luostarinen, anytime that Barkov is out, they pop Sam Reinhart back down with them, and suddenly that's a top line again. So it's pretty impressive, the forward depth. And I don't remember if we said this on the pod or before we were talking, but I know just the Panthers are year over year, because the depth was a big reason why they were a good team last year, or the last couple of years, why they were able to make these playoff runs, was the depth. The depth got better year one to year two, proof being they got to the final one year and got beat the bleep, and then year two they survive, they're healthy, they win the Stanley Cup, so that plays a big part in it. And now they just feel like they've got such a deep group of veteran guys, you know, you mentioned Thomas Nosek, AJ Greer, Jonah Gadovich, that's a crazy fourth line. Itu, Lundell, whether it's Evan Rodriguez, whether it's Mackey Simoncic, whether it's Jesper Boquist, like Boquist, they've used him in all three forward spots and he's excelled whatever they've asked of them. So they bring in the right guys that really fill in well. But it's a dangerous forward group that I would not want to be facing against, just because they've got so many different weapons that they can throw at you, to whether it's to score on you, to shut you down. So credit, all the credit in the world, man, goes to Bill Zito. He has built one incredible team in the, you know, September of 2020, he was hired. So, you know, just over 4 years now. And it's crazy to think that it's that long. Like, I remember sitting like right where I am right now. And I think it was like during COVID or whatever, when covering like the GM search and like Bill Zito, like it's crazy to think that so much time has passed since that happened, just because it's been such a, like the most positive segment of Panthers history. So it's been pretty cool to see it play out. And I always give it credit wherever I can, man. It's Bill Zito. He's done such a spectacular job, him and his crew.
We talked about it on the last show we had you on, and we nicknamed it, you know, this is Moneyball. Like, he's playing Moneyball right now. He is Brad Pitt. Bill Zito is Brad Pitt, and it's got to be Moneyball Bill now. That's the nickname. We're going to put, hopefully, you know, if we were bigger enough, I could be able to put that on a T-shirt, but Moneyball Bill, yeah, killing it in Florida. But, you know, the guy that you talked about here, Mackey, you know, Maki Samsonovic, he is
Samusevich.
I apologize.
No, it's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. You know, a guy who's a former first rounder, he played at the Steel. You know, whenever you can play in the U show, my ears perk up because it's a really, really good developmental league. He really destroyed the AHL last year. I know he went to Michigan for, I think it was a year, but 54 points in 62 games in the A. Really good. He's got 11 and 28 here. And I think, you know, he scored last night at the time of this recording. I think the thing that sticks out to me the most is that quick twitch, like his hands, like it's like boom, boom, like 1-2, 1-2. And you can catch guys off with that shot. Like it's quick. He's fast. He's a slippery guy. He may not be the most blue line to blue line guy, but he's someone I want in my middle six that I can't really hit. If I'm a defenseman, I'm just kind of trying to contain him in the corner. I'm not going for the hit because if I try and lead with my shoulder, he's just going to be like chip it out and then he's going to go right around me. I mean, there's so many guys that you look around this league, even when you come in college, AHL, NHL, they're just impossible to hit. They're so good with the puck. And that's what I love about Mackey. And I really do think he's going to be a nice middle six player for this team. And I think Paul Maurice has got some really good stuff. And I know it's been a couple years since he was drafted and we're starting to see him come together here. But if you're going to keep an eye on someone in this bottom six, middle six for Florida, it's Mackey because he's got a lot of interesting tools that I want to see developed the right way. And if there's one guy to do it, it's Paul.
Yeah, his development has been fun to watch. Paul actually spoke about Mackey after the game last night in Minnesota. Just, you know, first thing was talking about his shot. Like, you know, 22 years old, this kid already has like an elite level NHL shot. It is quick off the stick. It's very deceiving. What Paul really emphasized was not just the offensive elements of his game, but how he's responding to the NHL's physicality, how he's going to corners, coming away with pucks, how he's understanding on his shifts, you know, playing the two-way game, where if he loses the puck in the offensive end, he's just as anxious to get in there and take it back, or he's back-checking like, you know, ferocious, watching, you know, when you're watching guys like Carter Verhaeghe and Sasha Barkov back-check, it's easy to kind of pick up that kind of vibe, but he's doing all the things right. You know, he had a bit of a slow start to this year. I think he only had like, I think it was 1 point in his first 9 or 10 games. And then they started to come a bit more consistently. And you talked about the year he had last year with Charlotte. That was his first pro season. Like last year was the first year he was pro. The year before he was at Michigan, left Michigan, signed, I think in like April or May, hung around for the playoff run with Charlotte or with, I may have been with the Black Aces that year. I don't even remember. But either way, last year was his first pro season. He goes out, he leads the team in scoring. The coaching staff raves about him. And now since he's gotten here, he looked good in training camp. He got hurt, came back. I think he came back opening night, didn't seem to skip a beat. And it's just been a gradual process for him. And so 22 years old, you know, first round pick a few years ago, but I think he's going to be sticking around for a while. And as the confidence grows, as you know, Brian, it's such a big part with hockey players. So as his confidence grows, I would expect him to get more and more exciting, and maybe we'll see some highlight kind of stuff. Because that shot, dude, just when he gets it going in practice, even it's fun to watch. So it's really cool to see how he grows.
You add the shot with the quick hands, the back check. This is someone you want on your team, and just everything about him. If you can get a chance, go watch his U highlights, because that's really where it starts. Like that's where your development, when you're starting to really play at like a semi-pro level, and you could see the potential and you can see the raw potential there. And it's little videos like that that really can be like, hey, this kid might be able to play in the NHL. And then he goes to Michigan, and then he goes to the A, and now he's in the NHL. And I think he really hit it on the head here, is the ability to adapt to the physicality, because certain players, they just can't do it. It takes them a year to figure it out and to figure out their body positioning. And he has. He has with that speed, with those hands, with that shot. And it's really, really fun to watch. And, you know, the other question that we've been kind of hinting at here, and someone that you have to root for, is Paul Maurice. And I have to, you know, give him a little bit of time here on the show, because the way he guided that team last year to the Cup final, the way he's got them buying in this year, and just pretty much every year he's been in Florida, even when he was with Winnipeg, like his first press conference after, you know, winning the Cup, he's like, I really want to win one for Winnipeg. And like, damn, dude, like you were there for that long and you still want to win there. It just, it was a mutual parting at the time. And it just, it's so much respect for a guy who's been a hockey lifer, a guy who gets it and just calls it how it is. I mean, even behind the scenes on the Amazon show, he's like, getting on the ground, like, get it under the bar. And be like, that is someone I want to play for. It's the little, like, gimmicky things that fans are like, well, that's just cliche. But if you're sitting in the room, be like, hell yeah. Like, yeah. That, it just kind of, little stuff like that fires you up. And I just, if there's someone in this world I could have on the show and just pick his brain, it would be Paul. Because I think at the end of the day, he understands what the game of hockey is, but he also marries that into what does it mean to be a good human being in this world.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of where it starts, is just he's a good dude. And you kind of build from there the fact that he's been an NHL head coach since the mid-90s, which were you born in the mid-90s? I bet you weren't born in the mid-90s.
Late 90s. Yeah. It was closer to 2000 than I
was
90.
Paul Maurice has been coaching longer than you've been alive, my friend. And he's still in his 50s, like, which is like crazy to think about. So he's got this wealth of knowledge. He's seen the league go through so many changes. He's seen this game change stylistically. And he's just smart. Like, he knows hockey. He gets hockey. At least listening to him talk hockey is such a fun thing, just because, like, and Zito too. Like, it's crazy the knowledge that these guys have from doing what they've been doing for so long. I would love, obviously not going to happen, but just these Panther players, it must be so much fun to be coached by Paul, not just to play under Paul, but to be coached by him in meetings, to, you know, to travel. It's such a positive situation that they've built here between, if everybody's bought into this hockey program, they're very focused about their work and they take it very seriously, but they're also so happy and communal, and it's a really cool situation. And just whenever I get into these little diatribes, I just start thinking about it and talking about it. It kind of sinks in for me, like, 30 years of Panthers history that I've been here watching. And now they have this situation that, you know, franchises, I don't care what sport you're talking about, any sports franchises would love to be in this kind of a situation. So I just, you know, try to enjoy it while I can, because it's so cool. And I've got a front row seat for it. It's certainly nothing lasts forever, but man, it is so cool. And it's a deserved group that gets to experience it.
It really is. And my last question to you is here, between the Cup, the growth of hockey in Florida, because that cannot be underestimated enough. I remember going to my first Panther game and texting and being like, there's a good amount of people here, but I can understand why it gets a little bit of heat. From where it was, say, 5 years ago, to winning a Cup, to getting an outdoor game, I mean, you've been on this ride the entire time. And to sit and have a front row seat, what has that been like? Because, I mean, they built a world-class facility. You're talking about youth kids coming from Florida now. Like, the impact on the NHL, and as an example here, I know we're talking Florida Panthers, but I was recently in Tampa, and I was stunned at how much hockey merch and just everywhere. Like, the state of Florida is now a hockey hub, and it's incredible. And the Panthers have made their mark just as much as the Lightning, obviously, maybe not with the Cups, but in terms of growing it in the community and the game, building a world-class facility, I mean, what has that like been, considering seeing where it came from to where it is now? It's just, you have to tip your cap here.
It's spectacular. And, you know, it all started with the ownership group when they came in the early 20-teens, I think 12 or 13. Imagine, maybe it was 2011. I don't know. Now I'm just making myself look like an idiot because I don't remember the year. But it started with the Viola family and Doug Cifu coming in and making a commitment, putting their money where their mouths were, making smart hires. Matt Caldwell has been great for this team. He's been involved with the hirings of the GM, the coach. It's just, they've got a great crew here, man. And it's been awesome. I mean, I've been a hockey fan my whole life. I've been here since, you know, the first year for the Panthers, I've been rooting for them. So to see them grow into this, you know, I used to not even be able to talk about the dark ages of Panthers hockey, which was more than a decade long. They went 25 years between playoff series wins. Like, that's a quarter of a century. That's a generation almost. Like, that's crazy. And now I'm thinking about the Miami Dolphins, and I want to jump out the window, but I'm just getting sidetracked here. No, but it's been, you know, I just going back to what I said before about like it's such a deserved group that gets to do it too. But yeah, I mean, you know, as you said, if you went to a game 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, it really started to pick up after the first final appearance. And that's very South Florida. South Florida, they love their winners, they will follow their winners, they love the trendiness. So as long as the Panthers are good, it's gonna stick because that arena now is packed. Like I laugh with my colleagues in the press box because we'll be there in, a random Tuesday or whatever, and look to our right, look to our left, and the seats in the upper corners are all packed and full because they're all season tickets now, and everybody's into it and they're cheering for a bad icing or like they're into the game. It feels very genuine. And even though it's South Florida, knowing what kind of fan base it is, for the team to this is you're getting the South Florida sports fan base at its best right now, the way that the Panthers are. And it's a treat to see. And I'm sure that like all the longtime fans, the OGs that have been around forever, aside from the perhaps annoyance of not having the same kind of freedom with parking, getting around the arena, shorter lines to the bathroom, things like that. But no, overall, I mean, this is awesome. They're getting like 19,000 every game, and it's cool. It's very cool.
You have to tip your cap. You have to tip your cap to what the league has done, what they've done, everything. Just winning brings success across the board. At the end of the day, you're still trying to make a revenue here so you can pay your guys and just produce a really good on-ice product. We're going to wrap it up here, Dave. We're going to give you a couple seconds to plug your work where the fans can find you. And as always, thanks for joining the show.
Sure. No, anytime, man. Can find my work on thehockeynews.com/Florida. You can catch my weekly hockey podcast, The Hockey Show with Roy Bellamy on the Dan Le Batard Show Network, anywhere you get your podcasts, the videos on YouTube. And yeah, you can find me on Twitter at David's Work, Instagram, or on any of those social platforms. I try to like do the multiple ones, Brian, but like, I went on Blue Sky for a little while. I do not have the mental capacity or the patience to post to multiple social media platforms. I don't even like just tweeting now has become like, I don't want to do that anymore. So, and now I'm just being a little whiny, but anyway, that's where you can find me.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. To catch all the latest, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at The Hockey 411. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.